As we approach entering the third year of the COVID pandemic, we pause to discuss burnout on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here. The demands at work and at home have become persistently difficult. And as far as a timetable, who knows? These times have heightened everyone's risk of burnout. That's according to a new trends report from the American Psychological Association. Burnout and stress are everywhere, they said. How do you feel it? What have you done to relieve the mental exhaustion? Is your employer doing enough to give grace and not pile on additional stressors? It's 800-642-1234. Michael Leiter is an organizational psychologist and professor emeritus at Acadia University in Nova Scotia. He's an expert on job burnout prevention. Michael, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Very good to be here with the Ideas Network. It's a good idea to be thinking about these things.
Indeed it is. And when I heard Nova Scotia, I said, oh, that's funny. They don't have burnout there. They have, it's a maritime province. It's beautiful. Waves crashing. All your natural seaside. it drowns out the burnout. Or am I wrong? Is burnout everywhere?
It is everywhere. Even with the waves crashing and the sun shining. Well, today, not crashing or shining all that much, but it is a beautiful place. But even the most lovely places in the world, this can become an issue for people.
Burnout is pervasive. You found, how do you define it?
Well, you find it as that this three-part syndrome of exhaustion plus cynicism plus really discouragement, like losing confidence in yourself. I mean, people use the word to just being frustrated and frazzled and at the end of the rope, that kind of a feeling, which is a completely legitimate way of using the word. But in terms from psychology research, you look at it as the syndrome of these three things working together and aggravating each other. That combination of exhaustion, cynicism, and discouragement is really the essence of what is burnout.
Well, it's been defined as a syndrome, I think, back to 2019. But have scientists and researchers known about burnout for much longer, or are we just talking about it more?
Well, people have been talking about it for a long time. It really became part of something that was studied in psychology research and medical research starting in the 1970s, that people started formalizing it and saying, what is this thing? Because people were particularly using the phrases then. Very idealistic people were going to work and then finding that they were very frustrated with their capacity to do what it is they thought was important. And burnout was something that they used to describe feeling really exhausted and really discouraged at their work. So that's got formalized. And this idea of this three-part syndrome was really captured in the Maslow Burnout Inventory, which was the first major, you know, questionnaire that was developed to assess this, and still is the one that's used most widely. And that has these three components that it separates out and says what's going on with these three things. So that's been there. So that's been, oh, getting towards 50 years of trying to figure this thing out.
Oh, so we have a lot of solid research and data on burnout. And what I wonder is it on the rise? Are we seeing more of it?
There's a lot of indications that it's on the rise, yes. My own data, I did some surveys with places, you know, before and then after the pandemic got going. And you can see that particularly the exhaustion and cynicism rates were getting, elevated from where it was with the same people or the same organization a year or two beforehand. So there's, and other people have been publishing a variety of articles now have come out, and they're consistently saying that there is this elevation that they're able to see across a lot of occupations, and healthcare has been the one that's received the most focus, but it's not limited to healthcare.
Healthcare too. Burnout has been prevalent for a long time. You know, that is not new for healthcare. Do you imagine though? It's got a lot. It's really gotten worse in the pandemic.
Yeah, for a lot of people, it really has gotten worse in the pandemic, and it is that combination, all those kinds of things that lead into that lead into burnout. The workload, but also things about values and fairness and all of that have all become more intense during this time.
If you're just joining us, we're discussing burnout with Michael Leiter. He's an organizational psychologist, professor emeritus at Acadia University in Nova Scotia, focusing on the relationship between employees and their work. You can join in. Do you feel burned out with your job? What do you do to relieve stress at your workplace? How can your employer help to prevent worker burnout? 800-642-1234 to join in. You know, Michael, we think about toxic work environments where overworking is an issue, underappreciating is happening, but that's not the only place where burnout can happen. And I'm wondering, you know, the other culprits are out there. There could be burnout in with school or financial stress and burnout. Can you take us a little bit into other areas where you see burnout?
Well, the with other areas, what you're seeing with burnout are something that's really a fairly fundamental kind of human experience, which is why when you use this measure, and whatever occupation you're looking at and wherever in the world, you get a fairly consistent picture about how these three things fit together. So I think that's telling you it's tapping into something that's not just a contemporary cultural phenomenon, but something that is part of how people experience being overwhelmed with what they're doing. Now, the research really has been overwhelmingly on what's going on at work, but there are parallels in other domains of life, because parenthood is one where, again, people can get really exhausted. They can get quite discouraged. They can get Jennifer Senior, who writes for The Atlantic, and she wrote a book called a parenting book that's called All Joy and No Fun. And sort of capturing that idea that there's something very wonderful about this, but oh my gosh, it's a lot of work. And it can get really tired and you can get really discouraged along the way. So it's a parallel thing. People haven't researched that. There isn't as much that kind of solid data behind what's going on with parenting or sports or other kinds of activities in life. But anything where you're really intensely involved and that you're enthusiasm really matters in terms of how well things are going to go. Those kinds of elements can have crises that are parallel to what you find with burnout at work.
You know, on the internet, there's a lot of self-tests out there to see whether you are, confronting burnout, whether you have an issue with burnout, you're experiencing burnout. How do you get to know yourself to figure out whether whether you are in this burnout syndrome?
Right. Well, I guess, a lot of those measures, they vary. Some have a good solid base and some are just sort of somebody's idea that they made up that day. So you have to sort of, take it with a bit of a critical eye. But I think the main thing is you just focus in on those three elements of the exhaustion, the cynicism, and that sort of low sense of efficacy or discouragement. And just reflecting, what I advise people to do is just make a little, just a very short kind of diary that you would make a note at the end of your workday. And you'd say, did I feel exhausted even before my day began? Was exhaustion just sort of part of my day? Is that how much was that going on there? How often today did you feel really excited and really in the groove about what you were doing? Were you, cynically distant, or were you really involved in it in an important kind of way? And when did you feel really that you accomplished something, that you are good at what you're doing and that it's really important what you're doing? How often did you have that experience? And looking at the positive event, if I'm energetic a lot of the day, if I'm really involved and really enjoying this and being confirmed in my competence, then you're not really in that burnout place. But if you're on the other end of that, then you just sort of track over days how often you're feeling that way. It's going to give you a beat about whether you need to dig into this more deeply.
Organizational psychologist Michael Leiter with us works at the intersection of workplace engagement and the rise of employee burnout. Do you feel run down or drained with negative thoughts about your job? Does it seep into your home life like you can never get away? How is that affecting your quality of life? What have you done recently to relieve the pressure and the exhaustion? And did it help? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Michael Leiter here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing burnout on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Employers identify stress and burnout as a major threat for their workforces, and that is a takeaway from the 2021 Well-Being Diagnostic Survey released in January by consulting firm WTW, and it found one quarter of large employers have adopted a formal well-being strategy for their workforce. How can your employer help prevent burnout? When do you know it's time to take a different job? Has your workload changed considerably in these times? How so? 800-642-1234. Organizational psychologist Michael Leiter consults on employee burnout prevention and is with us for the hour. Michael, you mentioned healthcare as an industry really in the throes of burnout. Are there other industries in which burnout is happening more often as well?
Yeah, I think there are. I think there's been a lot from education, at all the different levels, really, from elementary up through university education, that people have felt. And what has happened a lot is that kind of work got really disrupted during the pandemic for so many people who are working in it. And with your thing about work is that you're going into a situation where you've got expectations and hopes and fears about what's going to happen, but also your employer's got expectations and hopes and fears about what you're going to be doing, and you work out a balance so that you get into a certain groove, so that you're rolling along, and maybe it's wonderful, maybe it's some days are not so wonderful, but you've got it in a balance, so it's working for you, and then all of a sudden everything changes in a very fundamental way. Like, how do you just communicate with your students? And it throws you. All that balance is now out the window. And it takes a lot of energy just to find out what's the new balance. How are we going to do this now? So I think that's an interesting development that's really made a difference for people on that end.
I think it's interesting, as you say, you work out a balance with your employer. You work out a balance with your job because you really see this as a relationship issue here when there is burnout, that it's not solely on the shoulders of the employee who's feeling it, not solely on the workplace environment. Can you tell us there about that give and take and that tension?
Yeah, well, I think, there's a lot of perspective on these things that talks about burnout, that what people need to do is just build their resilience. And I'm going, well, no, it isn't. Like, the problems that led to this increase in burnout over the last couple of years wasn't that people suddenly became less resilient. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that the workplace really changed in a fundamental way. It changed in a way that it needed to, because there was this crisis that needed to be dealt with. So it wasn't like the workplace was trying to be mean. It was just that it was really difficult trying to deal with all this stuff. So what really was the problem was that connection between the people in the workplace. That and you look at certain things like with workload, it isn't like everybody's got exactly the same level of workload that they can handle. Different kinds of work, different times of your life, different times of the day, depending on your skills, depending on how excited you are about what you're doing, you can handle really different amounts of demand, but it needs to be set up in a way that brings your energy and brings your enthusiasm and is renewing your energy as you go forward. So that's the kind of thing that gets upset when everything changes and people are just in workplaces are trying to find a new way of connecting with each other.
Can someone be predisposed to burnout? Is it a type of person that can have more, you know, more tendency for burnout?
Well, there is, but the problem is a lot of the kinds of things that tend people toward burnout, like one of them is just being very, very conscientious. People who are very conscientious, very dedicated to your values as well, are more prone to burnout because they're, it's a bigger deal for them when things start unraveling, things aren't going as well as they should. But conscientious people who are dedicated to their values, they're people that you want to have as employees. He said, we don't want any conscientious people here. That would be a bad employment strategy. Get rid of
very
those conscientious
so.
People. So, but they are, you know, more prone to, you know, be really upset or frazzled of, you know, try to put that extra energy in. Like what we found, I mean, there is that full burnout syndrome, but when we look at the data, when we have a large data set looking at it, we find there's also people in there who are scoring high on exhaustion. Like they really are tired when their day begins, but they love their work. They're not cynical at all. They're just very excited. They love what they're doing and they think it's the greatest contribution. They're saving lives or changing, you know, teaching children or just doing things that really matter to them. So their values are being fulfilled. They feel very competent and able, but they're exhausted. They're exhausted because they're not getting enough rest. They're working too many hours. The work's coming in so intensely and so complicated all of a sudden, which again happened to a lot of people during the pandemic. And they're really overextended. And that's a really different kind of problem than being exhausted as well as being discouraged and cynical and grumpy and really unhappy. That's a different world than the people who are overextended, but they're both exhausted. And a lot of difference is, well, how do they connect or disconnect with the kind of work that they're doing? Mm. It's not just one dimension that way. And they get mixed with people. When people say, oh, some huge percentage of people are burned out, they're also mixing in folks like that who aren't really, from my point of view, burned out because they don't have those negativity attitudes. But they are exhausted, and that's a real problem, but probably one that's a lot easier to fix than trying to recover from being cynical and discouraged as well.
Sounds like there is a lot of overlap here, a lot of gray area as you look closer at what essentially is burnout. Talking with Michael Leiter, who's an organizational psychologist, professor emeritus at Acadia University in Nova Scotia, you can join in on burnout and what you have done. How has your workload changed during the pandemic? Is it burnout or is it you being overextended? Do you find time to socialize with family members, with coworkers? What does that larger community and support system entail? 800-642-1234. Your story, your questions on burnout. Email ideas at WPR.org. Michael, how do you know if what someone perceives as burnout is a temporary thing or it's a sign of a larger problem? Like, how long can these feelings persist when you say, okay, that right there is burnout?
Oh, how long to get, it can persist for a long time. Well, to call it burnout, it needs to have persisted for a while because the way we assess it is to look at, you know, how often and for how long have these feelings persisted. So it's like if you say, just the item about feeling tired in the morning before your workday begins. If you say, well, that happens maybe once or twice a year, that just means you sometimes have an interesting social life. It doesn't really mean that you're burned out. But if it's happening regularly, like a couple times a week at least, or even every day, that you're feeling that way, well, then that puts it into that realm where burnout starts looking like a possibility. So they're both experiences anybody can have, but it's a matter of how often and how intensely you're having these kinds of experiences. And the data shows that people who've done studies where they followed up with people at a year or 3 years or 7 years or 10 years have found a lot of consistency about how they felt way back when and how they're feeling now. Like burnout often doesn't go away on its own. It's it's a kind of thing that really persists and can persist for years when it's because the person's, you know, largely the same, but a lot of people, their jobs aren't changing all that much. So if their situation is pushing them towards burnout now and it doesn't change, then in a few years, you're probably in the feeling the same kind of way about the same situation. So that's there's a lot of data that supports that.
Michael Leiter with us, looking for solutions to burnout, how to prevent it. Have you taken a burnout self-test? Do you feel passion for your job, or has that been stripped away? What was the turning point? Are you making a life change now due to workplace stress and exhaustion that has persisted over time? What are you experiencing? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Michael Leiter after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. As the pandemic drags on, worker burnout continues to be acute, especially for healthcare teams. We're discussing how to handle it on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Gallup has studied how to prevent employee burnout from its Workplace Insights published in January. There are people, it says, whose likelihood of experiencing burnout is essentially zero. And these employees share three traits. They're engaged at work, they have high well-being, and their organization has a strengths-based culture. Are you prone to burnout? What do you do when you feel overly exhausted? 800-642-1234. We have organizational psychologist Michael Leiter, studies workplace burnout prevention, with us for the hour. So let's look at how remote work has intersected with burnout. What do you see there, Michael, in shifting the workplace to home?
It's really been a mixed bag. I think the working from home bit has been, for some people, I call it sort of the revenge of the introverts, and that if you really didn't like dealing with all those people at the office, for some people, it's been a real relief. And a lot of people do report after they've gotten settled into it that they feel more productive working from home than they did working in the office, and that there are fewer distractions and they're not dealing with commuting and all that kind of thing. So there has been a positive range for some people. But for that to work, then you've got to have a home where you can set up an office and have some time to yourself and be able to focus on what you're doing. And that involves both furniture and space, but it also involves who else are you sharing that house with? And I know my daughter during this time had a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old, and the 7-year-old was doing remote school, and the 2-year-old was being a 2-year-old. And that's not exactly who you want as workmates when you're trying to get your work done. Delightful and joyful as they are. It's still, that's a different kind of configuration, and that, you know, it's something that made clear the extent to which schools and daycares are a major infrastructure for employers, for people to be able to get work done, is having these capacities out there, some way of freeing up parents so they can focus on what exactly they're supposed to be doing for their work. It's hard to divide the attention that way. So that was a particular piece. And then the other part is just that office, it changed very abruptly, the extent to which you were communicating with people remotely rather than face-to-face, which changes the whole dynamics of social interaction. And that's a strain for people, that kind of change. So that added another kind of level of demand and put in another psychological distance between people and their work.
What I'm also hearing from you is that it takes a village in this environment of instability. And we heard from Kelia in Milwaukee, who is a single mom holding down two jobs. And Kelia pointed out that friends and community have really stepped up to help out and keep Kelia sane in these times. What are the support systems that people should look to in order not to get to the burnout stage?
Well, that's a really important piece of it, because one thing that people really missed about going to work, the more sociable end of the scale, is that people want to belong. People want to belong to a group of people that, and they want to be a valued member of that. So having interactions with other people that, like, that not only make contact, but also convey to you that you're valued. So just expressions of appreciation, of sharing really meaningful events with each other, even when, you know, there had to be this serious social distancing, be able to connect with people. I think, you know, Zoom, people get, you know, say a lot of, you know, problematic things about Zoom and too many Zoom meetings and all of that. But having the video connection via the technology over the last couple of years, I think has been a real plus for people. It's been overblown, overused at times. Mm. But I think, yeah, those kinds of things, having a community, you got to then build that community at home, the one that you lost at work. So to be able to have those positive encounters, just those little interactions day in and day out, make a real difference.
Michael, I want to look at the stigma of burnout, because how should that employee who's feeling these three stages of burnout, how should they talk about that sense of burnout with their supervisor or their fellow employees and not feel that it's a stigma, not feeling that this will somehow hold them back in their career trajectory?
Yeah, that is a tough thing, and it is a place where people need to move carefully and assess what's going on around them, because there are employers or first line supervisors that they would be talking with that you got to figure out that person that they're going to talk to, how do they understand the issue? And with, you know, there are people who link at, well, if you are talking about burnout, well, then there's something wrong with you, rather than saying, no, there's something that needs to be improved here with the workplace. So I think that approaching that conversation, knowing that you can't just focus on the negative, it probably is leading, but there are things I really love about this job. But right now, there are these particular strains. And I'm looking to you, you know, the supervisor, the boss that you're talking to, I'm looking for some help in sort of trying to come up with a better way of running this so I can continue to be part of this organization here, part of this workforce, because this is really a valuable thing for me. I think framing it that way helps there, but it's really, I think I've written a new book with Christina Maslach. We have a new book coming out. It's called The Burnout Challenge. And in that, we're really trying to get the message across to people who are first-line managers that here is a way that you need to approach this burnout problem with employees. Mm-hmm. The idea that what really needs to be focused in are these key areas of work life that make a difference for people, and that the management within an organization has to exercise flexibility to be able to accommodate the different ways that people like to work, the different challenges that people have in showing up and being and focusing at work, that is something that is part of a manager's problem-solving responsibilities that they need to be focusing on, and not simply the idea of, oh, well, this person's feeling burned out. I need to replace them with somebody else.
You know, something I've really been, and it's that I think it's been difficult for me. And I have four kids and still do my job full time and have a huge support system around me. Without that, I would not be here talking with you. But I think the hardest thing for me, Michael, has been that, you know, your workplace is always trying to make you grow and be better and to have these goals and to achieve these goals and to continually be on this self-improvement pathway, if you will, that standing still is not an option. And I think for me, that has been what has been so stressful, is not being able to just say, you know what, I'm here, I'm doing the work. Isn't that good enough?
Yes, and particularly when things are in an extreme situation, as they have been, and in other ways are continuing to be an extreme situation. Yeah, I think maintaining a steady pace really needs to be appreciated. So I think you're right, and that's when you look at this as burnout, largely this relationship crisis between people and their work. That first line manager who is the point of interaction, that's somebody who really needs to grow in their appreciation and understanding of what kinds of challenges people are facing and how to take them through. And then, eventually we all want to get smarter and better and better looking and all of that. But basically, there are times when it sort of levels out for a while, and that's part of growing as well. So I think it's a really important point.
Talking about burnout, what to do about it with Michael Leiter, organizational psychologist, professor emeritus at Acadia University, focuses on the relationship between workers and their workplace. Hearing your experiences with burnout at 800-642-1234. We received an email from Elizabeth in Madison, Michael, and Elizabeth is telling us, I thought I had burnout, so I quit my job in healthcare IT in November. And Elizabeth says, now I realize that I may have been feeling overextended instead, and I miss my job, and I regret leaving. What would you tell Elizabeth?
Well, I'd say there's a lot of jobs in healthcare, and say she could probably get started again in another setting. But I think you learn a lot from these kinds of situations. You do, and that's where I think that self-assessment, I mean, as she's been doing, as she's expressing in this message, that you learn more about. You got to reflect a bit to find out what is it about the job that you really like. You know, ability to go through and say, what are the times where I really felt like I was doing something and I really felt connected with people, with the ideas, with the ambience of the place, and try to understand, well, what does that say about you, and what is it that you need to be nurturing and growing and getting more on? But I think that feeling, though, of being overextended is still a really unpleasant kind of thing, and it makes sense that, you know, you would want to back off, whether you quit or somehow are able to take some time off in order to recover and just get that energy, and then find out how are you going to go forward in the next phase with the next job or the next phase, mm-hmm. Where you aren't going to get so overextended. You're going to be able to maintain your energy.
This reminds me of the Yale cognitive scientist, Laurie Santos, who has the podcast, The Happiness Lab, and recently told the New York Times that she's taking a leave of absence to prevent her own burnout. And, you know, while I was appreciative of her saying that, I was also like, you know what? She has the privilege of being able to step back and to regroup. And many workers don't have that beautiful choice. And I was wondering, if you don't have that choice to step back, what do you do?
Well, that is really tough. And I think, again, enlighten employers ought to be making sure that they're able to provide that capacity to people, but there are a lot of employers who are lacking enlightenment, I think. So it is really difficult that way. Well, I think it really helps if you've got coworkers, other people that you're working with, who share some of the same issues and that you can work together with them. There's this idea that's called job crafting, where again, you use those elements I was talking about of figuring out what you like and what you don't like and what's energizing you and what's draining you. And you try to figure out, well, now the job crafting is, how much latitude do you have to lean towards the things that energize you and lean away from the things that are really wearing you down and distressing you. If there's no latitude, then, you know, you really do need to think about what other career options you can explore. But generally, people have some latitude, and you find just doing a little bit of moving into the positive direction can make a big difference.
Job crafting, have you done it? We have organizational psychologist Michael Leiter with us on how to prevent burnout at work, what to think about. Do you have healthy boundaries set between you and your work? What does self-care mean to you? do you or your boss criticize your work in the hopes that you that will motivate you to improve? What does that do to your stress level? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Michael Leiter here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we discuss burnout, I'm reflecting on our recent conversation with psychologist Ethan Cross, whose book Chatter is about how to get control of our negative inner thoughts and reduce the stress as we put on ourselves.
The take home here for me is learn about the tools that are out there. A lot of, you know, complicated science went into their discovery, but they're the take-homes are often very easy, and it's usually not about doing one thing, but rather doing several.
What tools do you use to control your workplace stress, to stop the depletion, the deflation, the cynicism? 800-642-1234. Emeritus Psychology Professor Michael Leiter consults with organizations on employee burnout with us for about 9 more minutes. It's interesting, you've guided work groups to help improve workplace civility. And I'm wondering, what have you taken out of these sessions that we can put into our lives, into our workplace?
Oh, right. That's been an interesting kind of approach to these things, because we are, a lot of the research had shown that a very important part of what made a difference between people who were moving towards burnout and people who were moving towards being more engaged was the quality of their relationships with others at work. And with this work on workplace civility, we focus really on not the great broad kind of ambience or workplace culture in a very abstract kind of sense, but just down to the social interactions. The how often in the past month at work has someone expressed appreciation to you for what you've done? Your supervisor, your coworkers, how often does that happen? You find that there's a big range for people, and the people for whom those positive interactions, appreciation and other things like that, are much more engaged with their work, and people who have very few of those are much more leaning towards the burnout side, and particularly then if they have just negative interactions. And they don't have to be all that negative. A lot of attention goes on sort of extreme bullying, but sometimes it's just you say good morning to somebody and they don't answer. They just walk by and you go, and that can be devastating. You know, in a way, it's very low intensity, extremely low intensity behavior because nothing happened at all, but it has huge meaning. And what we found with this approach that we're doing, which we look at as being sort of doing family therapy with work groups, is that you can get people to focus on how they are interacting with each other. Often people think that they're being really funny and making a really clever kind of joke when they're interacting with others. And in sessions like this, it comes out that no, others are really being offended by what you think is funny. It's not everybody, shares that joke, particularly the people on the receiving end of it. And learning that is a real eye opener for people. And it also means after you've had that conversation in, you know, one of these sessions, that you can't really make jokes like that anymore without really acknowledging that you are trying to hurt people's feelings and you aren't just trying to be clever. So that kind of interaction that you have with people within that setting. So it's like is pulling together the people who are part of a regular work group, the people who work with each other every day, and you have a facilitator who's helping to have this conversation. And we take them through a really set kind of agenda, which reflects on how do they really get positive feelings around, share with each other, mm-hmm. but also how does negativity happen? And see, can we make more of the positive and less of the negative happen?
I really like how you're comparing family therapy to a workplace setting type of therapy, because in a way, you know, your workplace is very much your family. You spend maybe more time there in those hours than you do at home sometimes. So, you know, what and I understand you have a facilitator in this setting, but do you see change after these types of settings where there's a facilitator and it is more like a therapy session around burnout?
It is, yeah. The data shows that one is people can learn to be much more positive and to do less negative. So that balance of positive to negative, it does change in the right direction. Because, generally we're working with groups that decide, we've got a problem here and we really have to do something about it. Because people have to be on side. It's something you can't just make them all better. They have to work with you and say, okay, this is part of what we're going to do. But people need somebody to help them from outside. People get just stuck in their own ways of doing things. You get really anxious about talking about relationships, like if you're with, a significant other and they say, we've got to talk about our relationship, everybody gets scared at that point, so it's not an easy thing to do. So you need some help with that. But also we track what's going on with their scores on the burnout scale. And we find that particularly exhaustion and cynicism start dropping off with that, because there's just this combination that people who are on the burnout end of things, they're receiving more negative interactions with each other, with other people, from other people, but they're also interacting, they acknowledge that they're more negative with other people as well, because they just can't be positive. But every time you're sort of rude or grumpy with somebody else, that's how they're going to come back at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it
spreads. So then people who are, on the grumpy end of the scale, their world just becomes more and more grumpy, and so do they. So you need something that breaks that cycle, and that's what we've set up, this thing that we call strengthening a culture of respect and engagement, and it makes a difference.
We only have a few seconds left, but I'm wondering, does kindness, in instituting more kindness, does that help break the cycle of burnout? What do you see there?
Oh, yeah, that's the kind of thing. When we're talking about civility, we aren't just talking about being polite and following the rules of etiquette. We're talking about actually reaching out to people and saying something positive, actually including people in your conversations rather than leaving it just to chance whether or not they're part of things. So it's a really much more of a reaching out with the positive, not just saying, oh, yeah, I'm positive about people. No, you got to actually do something.
Oh, Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a delight being here. I've really enjoyed this conversation. You're doing good work here.
Oh, me too. Michael Leiter is an organizational psychologist, professor emeritus at Acadia University in Nova Scotia. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.